Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Radio proudly brings to you the latest edition of Working the Marks, and I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, Fernando Uribe, the professor here in the house, folks, and of course he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the illustrious, the glorious, the amazing PBR. What's going on, brother?
The super athlete. I am the super athlete of analysts. Happy to be back, it feels like it's been a while. It feels like a lot has happened since we last joined you Filthy Marks here on Working the Marks. It's a special day. I'm taking time for my schedule. I was feeding baby alpacas. I was also helping out the platypus, which I know Fernando is very, very fond of, the platypus. And, I'm also taking time away from Manchester United, possibly seeing another defeat. To be here with you, Filthy Mark. So don't ever say that I don't do anything for you. But I'm just here to do my part, my contractual obligation, and that's pretty much it. But yeah, good to be back with you, Profe.
Absolutely, happy August to you all at home, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, shoot us an email about what you love about the show, what you don't like, and everything else in between. WorkingTheMarks@gmail.com. We love getting emails. Write to us again. WorkingTheMarks@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, of course, the show @working_the_marks. Of course, check out PBR's own Instagram @PaddyRican. That's PaddyRican. And of course, check out my Instagram @TheFernandoZone. Yes, don't worry about the little warnings you get from Instagram, folks. They'll ask you whether or not you want to follow me anyway. Again, Instagram seems to think or believe that I'm consistently guilty of spreading misinformation, but that's, big tech and all the corruption of Mark Zuckerberg. But check us on.
Or they might be onto something. They might be onto something there too, It might not totally be bullshit. They might be onto something.
They're not onto anything as far as I'm concerned. Folks, check us out on Twitter @working_marks. Of course, check out PBR's on Twitter @PatrickSKVM. And, of course, my Twitter as well, @TheFernandoZone. Folks, we love getting comments about the show. Make sure you like Working the Marks on Facebook for all you Facebook subscribers, right, that haven't been shadow banned or having your content limited by Mark Zuckerberg. Check us out there as well. PBR, again, as you mentioned, it's felt like a little while, right, since we've been off a couple of weeks here on the show. We work hard, bro, so we deserve a little time off during the summer. But let's get to it here. A lot of news. Obviously, in the last couple of weeks.
Hey, can I ask you something before we?
Sure.
Do you have the coordinates? Do you have the coordinates of where the Fernando Zone is located on a map? Or is the Fernando Zone?
It's everywhere.
The Fernando Zone is everywhere. It sounds like a fucked up Discovery Zone for adults. The Fernando Zone.
We do try to keep it PG here, but it could be a little fucked up Fernando Zone, that's for sure, in the adult world.
Oh my God! Oh, hold on, I got to remember this day. You actually cursed on the show for once. Oh my God.
A lot of stuff here going on in the news cycle. Obviously,
yeah.
let's get to some of the things that are kind of funny first. It seems like the Nature Boy Ric Flair coming off his last match in Nashville. Let's put aside what we thought of the card, which is a pretty good card, and the main event itself. But it seems like Fight TV got a hell of a lot of subscribers that night. The buy rate, I think, was pretty good for an independent show, not affiliated with any major wrestling company. It looks like the buy rate was really, really solid. It seemed like the online traffic was also very good. It seems like Ric Flair is probably intimating that he regrets saying this is his last match because he feels he's got another one in him, evidenced by traveling to Puerto Rico last weekend, having a face-off with Carlos Colon almost 40 years to the day after their last meeting or face-off. I don't know, man. It just seems like money's addictive, and it seems like the Nature Boy feels he wants another match. I think it'd take away from all the hoopla, let's be honest, all of the hoopla, all of the pomp and circumstance going into that weekend in Nashville where, like, everybody was sending testimonials. You had living legends sitting at ringside to watch Ric Flair's last match. And not for Rick to pull a Brett Favre, I'm sorry. I hope he doesn't do this.
I hope he doesn't either, man. I didn't even think that you know, his last match, as they were, you know, billing it, I didn't think that shit was necessary either. I mean, look, this dude had a last match already at WrestleMania against the GOAT. Like, there's no better way to go out than that. You know what I'm saying? I know maybe he wanted to do more, but it's like, dude, you know, you're at a certain age where it's just like you can't keep up, you know? And even in that match, bro, he admitted that he passed out a few times. Like, I don't understand, like, why anybody would think that that's a good idea, like, at all. Like, I get why Flair thinks it's a good idea. You know, I know that Flair, you know, he keeps up the Ric Flair lifestyle. He always has. He was on Detriment, you know? He keeps up the Ric Flair lifestyle. And I just think that if he gets back in there again, dude, he's risking serious injury, like, possibly even death. Because it's like, yo, dude, you're a bad motherfucker, no doubt. You're Ric Flair. You survived a plane crash. You did all this amazing stuff. You are a legend, and you should be treated and respected as such, no matter what helicopter tricks you might want to do and whatever petty feuds you want to have with women calling themselves men these days, and not like the ones that you complain about on your other show. But you get what I mean. Like, Rick needs to just be a talker or do something else, you know what I'm saying? Or maybe be involved backstage or mentor young wrestlers. But getting back out there and wrestling again, it's not a good idea. And look, I love Ric Flair to death. Jay Lethal, cool guy, a friend. That match was not very good. It just was not very good. It was kind of sad at one point watching it. And I just don't see the necessity for another one. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you really want to blame anybody for why this stuff keeps happening, blame the marks. Blame the fans that still keep investing money in this shit. You know what I'm saying? Because, again, I've said it a million times. You could go take a look at our old episodes. Fans aren't going to be happy until somebody's dead. They're just not. Sting's jumping off a fucking balcony like he's New Jack. Well, all it takes is one bad move and Sting's done. You know what I'm saying? But fans don't think about that. They don't care about that. You know? And I think, honestly, there's no sense for Rick to have another match. I get the money thing. He could find other ways of making money. He could figure out other ways to do things. I mean, he's got his own strain of cannabis now. Ride that out. Do other things, you know? But, like, this thing to get back into the cage, I mean, to get back into the ring again, it's a fight. I just think it's completely silly. And I just think it's completely unnecessary. Moreover, it does a great disservice to the legacy of the Nature Boy.
Well, speaking of legacy, I mean, obviously when we talk about Ric Flair's last matches, if we all remember, folks, back in March of 2001, as WCW under the Turner umbrella came to a close, his last match was against Sting. He joined WWE, obviously his last match against Shawn Michaels. Then he joined TNA/Impact Wrestling. Coincidentally, his last match in TNA was also against Sting, which was kind of ironic. And, of course, we saw what happened in Nashville a couple of weeks ago. I mean, Pat, obviously we see reports. He admitted in interviews that he had passed out not just once but twice from being dehydrated in that arena. And if you remember, folks, if you watched it like I did, you know, he did defeat Jeff Jarrett with a figure four. Jarrett's shoulders were pinned to the mat, which normally is what happens if you're about to pass out from the move. The problem was that Ric Flair's shoulders were also on the mat because he had literally passed out. So not a good optic in the sense of the way the match closed, Pat. But under the circumstances, I guess, you know, we suspend disbelief for a minute, right? And Earl Hebner counted Jeff Jarrett's shoulders to the mat for a count of three when, let's be honest, he could have done the same. But that's just the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah, I mean, look, that right there, he passed out twice in the middle of a fucking match. How is it a good idea to put him back out there? How? How is it a good idea? You know what I'm saying? Like, are all these marks going to change his adult diapers when he can't fend for himself or do anything anymore? Like, it's just not a good idea. And I don't know who's going to tell Rick otherwise. I know, you know, he's fractured a lot of relationships because of the fact that he just does not want to stop being Ric Flair. And I get it. And to some degree, I respect it. But it's like, come on, bro. Like, hang it up. Hang it up. I'm sure if Terry Hogan could have another match again, he would. But it's not necessary. It's just not necessary. And again, you're doing a great disservice to your legacy by that type of stuff. So,
no,
I don't know.
I'm
against it.
Listen, I'm with you. I mean, for nostalgia purposes, it was great to see him walk down the aisle. But like you mentioned, I mean, he's putting his health at risk. And to do what? I get it, he's doing it for money. But if Rick's not going to say he's doing it for the fans, because as you mentioned, the fans are being selfish in this way. If you really love Ric Flair, don't encourage him to get back in the ring. It's as simple as that. You know, and I love Ric Flair. He's arguably my favorite wrestler of all time. But if you're a mature adult that is, again, compassionate, be a little selfless here. Don't just want Ric Flair to wrestle because you just need to see him. I get it. There's a nostalgia to it. But you're being selfish by ultimately maybe putting this guy's life in danger. That's what he did. That's what he did by passing out twice. And I get it that his doctor said, well, he's in good physical health. He, you know, cut down on the body fat. That's all well and good, Pat. I'm not a medical doctor. But, I mean, as a man of science, I mean, that, just looking at this, this just does not look healthy at all. I hope Rick really reconsiders this. I get it. People are saying, well, you have another match in you. Look how mobile you were. He wasn't really mobile. If you're being honest with yourself, watch that match over again. He wasn't mobile. He really, really wasn't. He did the bare minimum, which is what you wanted out of Ric Flair, but not a good look for him. I hope whether it's Conrad, whether it's his wife, whether it's whoever, I mean, let's be honest. Just look at Mick Foley, look at Bret Hart, and look at Undertaker's face at ringside. Yeah, they enjoyed being there. They like getting the comp and everything. They did not look happy sitting there having to watch this. I think as professionals, their heart probably broke inside, though, Pat.
Of course it did. Of course it did. You know what I'm saying? Because it's tragic to watch. I mean, here is one of the all-time greats. I mean, arguably, you know, a guy who's in the GOAT conversation, for sure. You know, and you're watching this, I mean, like, fifth-rate version of him. It's not even like third, it's fifth rate, you know? But again, it's not anything supernatural. I mean, like, fucking Father Time, bro. You know what I'm saying? It catches up to everybody. But I just think that a lot of it's motivated by his lifestyle and his insistence to still be Ric Flair. And you know, that's why it's alienated him from Shawn Michaels, from Triple H, from Arn to some extent, you know, because they all got tired of it. They were just like, yo, what the fuck, Rick? This was cute when, you know, when you were like 30-something or, you know, 20-something or, you know, when you were younger. But like, you know, 70-something-year-old man almost pushing 80 and you're walking around strutting, you know, fucking being Ric Flair. It's like, it's not that cool anymore.
Well, Pat,
you know?
Pat, even put it in perspective, whether the reports are true or not, even when he was speaking with his daughter had to talk him off the ledge, you know, figuratively speaking. When Rick thought he could, hey, well, since Sting is doing these stunts and jumping off of this and jumping off of that, I think I could do it too. I mean, thank God for Charlotte maybe talking some sense into her dad and saying, no. Again, whether the reports are true or not, we don't know. We'll take it at face value. But I'm sure at some point somebody had to talk him down because he probably wanted to do a crazy stunt like Sting has done. And that, too, was putting his life in danger.
Absolutely. I mean, it's incredibly risky, and it's just completely unnecessary. And look, for me, I'm pretty sure you probably feel the same way as, you know, as I do from what I'm about to say, but like, that's not the Ric Flair I want to remember. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
The Ric
Absolutely.
Flair I want to remember, you know, is the Nature Boy of old, you know, styling and profiling, coming out with that robe, with the woo, with the women, with the music, you know, and just that atmosphere that he would create, that greatness, that aura of greatness, you know, like you're watching a Muhammad Ali, a Babe Ruth, a Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying? That's the Ric Flair I remember, and that's the Ric Flair I want to remember. This Ric Flair now, that's not the Ric Flair I want to remember. And I don't think that should be the Ric Flair that we should remember. And I don't think that should be the Ric Flair that these young people can say that they saw last. I don't think that's cool. You know what I'm saying? So hopefully he doesn't make that decision, and maybe they figure out a different way for him to make a little money and keep going and doing his thing, but another match certainly is not it.
I agree. I mean, we'll find obviously in the weeks and months ahead whether or not he'll decide to do that. In other news, obviously, not to take away sort of from our main topic this week, but Pat, I mean, what have we seen these last few weeks since Paul Levesque effectively became the head of creative in WWE? We've seen the return of Dakota Kai, my girl Io Shirai / now Io Sky, the return of Karrion Kross along with Scarlett. Kind of interesting, though, you know, and I think that that's helped to translate into some good ratings for Raw early on after SummerSlam, obviously. We were getting like 2 million, 2.1, I believe, for the first Raw after SummerSlam. I think last week's Raw was 2 million also. SmackDown continues to do well. It's really interesting, though, man. And you know, Triple H has been, he's been that god for the march for some time, right, because of NXT in the past, because of, you know, to use a quote you use very well, you know, Triple H scratches the bellies for a lot of marks out there that just, oh, well, I don't like what Vince does, and Triple H does it differently. You know, bring him back Cross, bring him back Dakota Kai, who effectively was released. I'm sorry, or chose not to resign, excuse me. Io Shirai, again, chose not to resign for whatever reason. Now Triple H, this past Monday, Dexter Lumis making an appearance, right? A guy that, you know, had a nice run in NXT, went to NWA after he was released. Apparently he's back clearly in WWE. I don't know, man. When you're seeing these things and marks online are rejoicing because it's just like these are things that Vince wouldn't have done. And I think that, again, time will tell when they turn on Triple H because they will. A lot of marks online will turn on him. But it just seems like he's I think he's kind of doing – listen, you want to talk about someone doing completely different things from Vince McMahon. He's, at least in these first couple of weeks as being, you know, him in charge, Triple H is, I think, making a lot of people happy in the online wrestling community, which might not always be a good thing, bro.
No, of course not. I mean, look, at the end of the day, Triple H has more knowledge – in his pinky than a lot of these marks do about, you know, their own lives and their own jobs. So, I mean, I have a ton of faith in Triple H and what he's doing. I mean, people are going to complain. They're going to say whatever. They're eventually going to turn on him. You're absolutely right. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's WWE. You know, like, they have a very strange love-hate-love relationship. There's some people out there with conspiracy theories that, you know, Vince is still secretly, you know, Emperor Palpatine-ing it, like, behind the scenes, and, you know, Triple H and Stephanie are his apprentices, but he's still technically running the show, when in reality, I think that's the farthest thing from the truth. I think Vince is completely gone, and proof of that is, you know, you're seeing some of these people return and getting an opportunity. So, you know, fair play to the people that got released, that didn't jump at the first offer they got from AEW. You know, last night, for example, you know, you see Hit Row returning. Imagine how much more powerful that would have been with George Strickland. You know what I mean? Would have been a bigger deal. And, you know, now he's kind of just marooned over there at AEW, which maybe might not be the worst thing for him. Maybe that works for him. But, you know, it's definitely noticeable, the changes. More importantly, I think what's come back is just that aura of unpredictability that used to exist in wrestling, that used to exist, you know, in WWE, you know, that whole, anything can happen in the World Wrestling Federation, you know, the old saying, and it kind of feels like that now, you know, especially with all these people coming back, all these people returning, you know, he's trying to make it as, you know, as interesting as he can, you know, and as compelling as he can and surprising. And, you know, I'm curious to see where the rest of this goes. Obviously, the armchair bookers are going to complain at some point because they complain anyway, and they feel like they know more than people who've been in the business forever, which I don't know why, but, you know, They do. So, you know, let's see how everything plays out. But right now, I think it's been pretty darn good, and I think things are only going to go up really from here.
Yeah, absolutely. In other news as well, we saw the announcement that the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship is being resurrected, right, after maybe a couple months out of the headlines, right, since Sasha Banks and Naomi effectively walked out because of creative differences with Vince McMahon. It seems like, according to the dirt sheets or reliable wrestling journalists, which is kind of a rarity these days, right? You know, maybe you can count them on one hand, you know, maybe Wade Keller, some other people, but not a lot. You know, Billy Boddy, I know, has been the best at this forever now. But interesting brackets, obviously, for people that aren't aware, obviously, the women's tag titles, which, again, Pat, I have to say, I've said this before, I like the concept. I think it women that maybe aren't being prominently featured regularly, it gives them a chance to kind of be back in the spotlight again. I think this tournament helps a lot. I think women that maybe were backstage and weren't being used kind of gives, you know, give them something to do, you know, put them in this tag title picture. And I think, you know, the reason Stephanie McMahon, you know, was very big on this in helping resurrect the women's tag titles was, again, to give, you know, women power to kind of just enable more and more young female fans to tune into the product and make it more appealing, right, to get them interested in pro wrestling, which we'll get to that term in a minute because it seems like that term might be coming back, thank the Lord. But, you know, obviously we have brackets here, Tamina and Dana Brooke versus Io Sky and Dakota Kai. We got Alexa Bliss and Asuka taking on Nikki Ash and Doudrop. In the other side of the bracket, Natalya and Sonya Deville will be taking on Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark. And, of course, Zia Lee and Shotzi against Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah. Thus far advancing into the second round, Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah. Also, we did see Io Sky and Dakota Kai advancing. I believe this week we're going to be seeing the other half of the brackets. I think it's a win-win, bro. And, again, for titles that should be prominently featured, the women's tag title, which has a certain lineage and a certain history, I don't think this is a bad thing. Again, hey, another checkoff, as far as I'm concerned, for Paul Levesque in how he's running creative. Well, I would argue, and maybe better, by resurrecting this and not letting it be stagnant, bro.
I mean, look, dude, I've talked to a lot of people about this. And, you know, with Vince, you know, Vince is still Vince, you know what I'm saying? Michael Jordan with the Wizards wasn't as good as Michael Jordan with the Bulls, right? But Michael Jordan with the Wizards still put up 20. You know, he still put up 20 a game. Vince McMahon now wasn't as good as Vince McMahon back in the day, but he's still Vince McMahon. And, you know, obviously, yeah, there's going to be a generational disconnect. It's not anything supernatural. You know what I'm saying? But, like, as far as it goes with, like, the things that matter, you know, the metrics that, like, really count, you know, he checked all those boxes consistently and was doing it in record numbers, you know? I mean, it's really, really impressive that even at his absolute worst, he was still better than some people said, you know? But with that being said, the time for change was definitely there. Triple H, you know, has been groomed to be in this position. Stephanie has been waiting for this opportunity her whole life as well. And I just think that they're going to maximize it, and they're going to bring in fresh ideas. So it's definitely not anything supernatural. But, you know, I just feel like people should give Vince just a little bit more respect and not just act like, oh, well, my God, everything he did was horrible for, like, the last, you know, 20-some-odd years. Like, no, he didn't. He did a lot of good things. Mm-hmm. Did some things fall by the wayside? Yeah, absolutely. Let's see what Triple H can do with it. Let's see. Maybe Triple H can make the women's tag team, you know, division – one of the best divisions in all of the business. We don't know yet. You know what I'm saying? But I think it's definitely good to some extent. I'm not huge on it personally, but I'm going to see how it plays out. And I hope they make it exciting. I hope I'm proven wrong that they can do something interesting with it. We'll see. But it's cool to have that mix of the NXT talent as well as the main roster talent in that tournament.
I know, absolutely. But Pat, I think it also lends itself to, like, a bigger sort of elephant in the room where, you know, listen, we said it last time on the show, I mean, we haven't given Vince his flowers appropriately. This is a guy who, again, Paul Heyman recently talked about it in an interview where this is a guy who dedicated 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, 12 months a year for 40 years. I mean, nobody was arguably more dedicated to his business, his company, than Vincent K. McMahon. So, of course, you know, as Paul Heyman said, you know, the reason that everybody is so, you know, wealthy in WWE is because of Vince McMahon. it almost makes you wonder where, and I've seen some of this commentary online where people have written things like, well, thank God that this stuff has come out about Vince. And even more news is coming out about other hush money agreements, right, that have come out. We'll get to that in a minute in our next story. But it seems like a lot of marks are like, you know what? If this is what it took to get rid of Vince, hallelujah. Because guess what? With Triple H now in charge, we're going to be doing – we'll be seeing better things. We wouldn't have seen it with Vince because, let's be honest, Vince could have been like Frank Lautenberg, the late United States Senator here in New Jersey. He would have died in office. It just seems like Vince was going to die on a hill, literally and figuratively. And I think for a lot of fans are like, well, you know, yeah, we respect Vince, but like Vince was, if it wasn't for this controversy, Pat, he wouldn't have stepped down. He would have still had a creative. Mm. Mark would have still complained.
I disagree.
Really?
I disagree. I do. I think Father Time is catching up, man. You know what I'm saying? I mean, dude, there's a lot that we don't know. You know, there's a lot of stuff that obviously we're unaware of as fans, you know, as viewers of the product. So I think inevitably Vince was going to step down. I think that was definitely going to happen no matter what. You know, I mean, this guy has been there for literally the better part of like 40 plus years involved with the company. You know, it's his life. It's his world. But inevitably, the guy was going to step down. I mean, you know, nobody's going to keep that up. And you know what? Good for him. He's enjoying his retirement. That's great. I think just a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions maybe about him. And I think that this plan was in place regardless of what was going to happen. If it didn't happen this year with all the, you know, the controversies, something was going to happen eventually, sooner or later, where he was just going to step down. He was going to be done with it. You know what I mean? Because it's too much, man. It's a lot for a healthy, you know, 40-plus-year-old or a 40-year-old individual to handle. Imagine a 77-year-old man. You know what I'm saying? Like, it says a lot. So, you know, I don't really think that Vince was going to be one of those guys. Did this obviously have some impact on it? Absolutely. But like I said in previous episodes, I think that he did this to mainly preserve, you know, future involvement of major superstars like Rocky and like John Cena. And I think that he saw that this might be detrimental to his product, so he decided to step away. But regardless of that, I think that this was going to be inevitable regardless.
No, Pat, you're right. I think it was going to be inevitable. I mean, again, age, the workload, the wear and tear on his body, right, stress levels, everything else that comes from being that type of workaholic. But, you know, man, like I said, some marks are going to be like, well, hey, if Vince was still in charge, we wouldn't be seeing Karrion Kross and Scarlett back on TV. We wouldn't see Bayley on TV with this new faction. We wouldn't be seeing the women's tag titles. And it's like, unfortunately, it only emboldens marks to say, hey, thank God it took this. Because, you know what, we wouldn't be seeing new wrestling.
It takes anything. It takes anything to embolden them, okay? The weather's bad. It's Vince's fault. You know what I'm saying? They'll blame Vince for anything, okay? You know, they saved a bunch of money on their car insurance by switching to Geico. Somehow it's Vince's fault. You know what I mean? So they're going to blame Vince for everything, regardless of what the situation is. Do we know that this would have happened? No. It's all hypothetical. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, we know that the guy delivered a great product for years, and it's not supernatural for somebody to not be as good when they get older. You know what I mean? We just finished talking about Ric Flair. Ric Flair is not the same guy that we grew up watching. You know what I mean? So it was going to happen regardless. And you know what? The marks, they're going to rant. They're going to rave. They're going to come up with whatever they're going to come up with to suit their own narrative. At the end of the day, the boogeyman's gone, okay? The boogeyman's gone now. Who are you going to blame? You know what I mean? Who are you going to blame now? Triple H? We'll see. A couple of months. Weeks. I give it a few weeks, actually.
No, listen, I'm with you. I think that fans will turn on Triple H the minute they don't like booking for certain things. Maybe certain people returning. I mean, thus far, you know, it's kind of funny. It almost seems like the courting period, bro. Like when you're dating a chick and it's kind of going well and you're doing all the right things. You're opening the doors. You're getting her flowers. It seems like Triple H is doing everything nice to kind of like sweet talk you, right? But the minute, I don't know, the minute you forget to open the door, the minute you don't bring fresh flowers, it seems like the marks are going to turn on him. like, I'm telling you, like a bipolar female. I'm telling you, it'll be interesting to see what happens. We're certainly not seeing that in the ratings per se thus far, which we'll get to in a minute with our big story this week. But in other news as well, something that I thought was very interesting to talk about. It seems like maybe even the name quirks that marks online were having meltdowns about forever, right? Apparently, it seems like since Vince McMahon resigned from his duties, we're seeing obviously possibly some name changes, some returns to the names we've been used to. For example, Angel might be going back to Angel Garza, according to reports. Humberto Carrillo, who knows whether or not that's going to affect people like Theory or Ciampa, we don't know. There's been rumors about Tommaso Ciampa going back to his own music, which was really over, I think, at NXT, and just actually sold well on iTunes. I actually did some research on this, and actually it was selling pretty well on iTunes, one of the more popular things. It's interesting, though, man, how things like this really get the marks worked up online when they just didn't like when Vince would change names, when Vince would either do the little quirky things that really rub them the wrong way. It seems, again, I don't have anything to confirm it, though, Pat, but it seems like from some backstage news reporting by Wrestling Inc. and also by Wade Keller, it seems like maybe he wants to kind of get away from some of the things Vince was doing. Is it starting out with a clean slate? Is it bleaching things like Hillary Clinton with her server at home with emails? I don't know. It just seems to me it's like a complete wash and starting fresh, bro. What do you think?
But what about her emails? What about her emails? look, dude, it doesn't matter what it is, okay? You could call him Theory, Austin Theory, Fulanito de Tal. It doesn't matter. The dude's got talent coming out the wazoo. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing with wrestling. You can call it wrestling. You can call it sports entertainment. You know what the fuck it is. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter what you call it. You know? So at the end of the day, like, those who are going to thrive are going to thrive. And they're going to succeed no matter what. Doesn't matter what you call them, what the situation is. Marks are going to be annoyed by anything that Vince McMahon has done. Period. That's just the way it is. Although, oddly enough, most of their closets are packed with his merch and his intellectual properties, but that's a whole other conversation for another time.
That's right, yeah.
I mean,
that's right.
Look, dude, talent is talent. Doesn't matter what you call it. Talent is talent. And it's always going to – the cream's always going to rise to the top, and the people that need to be in those positions will be in those positions. So I don't really give a rat's ass about the name changes. I know everybody was complaining about Walter. Oh, Walter's Gunther now. Yo, Walter sounds like some dude that hangs out at the local bar and reads the fucking newspaper and listens to AM radio, okay? That's what he sounds like. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
What's wrong with AM radio? WFAN, 77 WABC. What's wrong? What's going on, bro? Oh, hey.
Well, not when you're hanging out at the Dunkin' Donuts near Tunnelly Avenue, okay? And you're there at 6 in the morning, you know, drinking a tall cup of, dark roast there. You know what I'm saying? That's what Walter sounds like. But now Gunther, oh, shit. Okay. That sounds like the ring general. That sounds like somebody intimidating, somebody scary. You know what I'm saying? And that's what they want that character to be. And let me tell you, man, that's a guy, by hook or crook, has made the most out of every opportunity that he's been given. He's not a guy that's crying or complaining backstage. He's not bitching and moaning. He's saying, hey, this is the challenge. Challenge accepted. And now look at him. Had an amazing match last night with Nakamura on SmackDown.
Yep.
The guy looks the best that he's ever looked in his career. The guy's the limit for him. You know what I'm saying? So he didn't let a name change hinder him. He didn't give a rat's ass about that. He just made the most of the chances that have been afforded to him. And at the end of the day, that's what counts. And that's what should count. But Marks are just going to complain about nonsense just to complain about nonsense because they have nothing else better to do with their lives. You know, they'll complain about something so much and hate it so much, but yet they'll still tune in and watch it. Very sick. Hello?
Pat, you hear me? Pat, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay.
Hello, are you there?
Yep, okay. I'm here. In other news this week, obviously reported in the Wall Street Journal, WWE is finding more, quote, unrecorded expenses by Vince McMahon, now coming up to a total of $20 million. WWE this week releasing a report that an independent board probe of former CEO Vince McMahon is showing an additional unrecorded payments of $5 million, now bringing the total to $19.6 million. Now, McMahon did resign, obviously, from all positions at WWE on July 22nd after news broke that the company acknowledged that they were investigating for misconduct and subsequent payouts to women. He does remain a stockholder with a controlling interest in the company. WWE did note that in a filing with the SEC, that is the Securities and Exchange Commission out of Washington, D.C., it determined that certain payments Vince McMahon made from 2006 to 2022 were totaling $14.6 million. Since then, it has found two additional payments totaling $5 million, unrelated to the allegations that led to the special committee investigation that McMahon made in 2007 now and in 2009, and that they should have been recorded in the company's consolidated financial statements. It said its special committee investigation is ongoing. The company said, quote, it expects to conclude that its disclosure controls and procedures and internal control over financial reporting were not as effective as a result of one or more material weaknesses. The payouts are a financial issue because while the amounts spread over time were not material in any individual period, the total is when reported in aggregate, as WWE is planning to do that for the June quarter. A lot of economic business mumbo jumbo here, folks, but I think in essence, just to make it as concise and compact as we can, it seems like there is more information coming out about Vince McMahon. It seems like this independent probe is not going to stop. You know, again, Pat, you know, as long as Vince has major control of the stock, which was smart of him to do that when he took the company public, it seems like, again, I'm not intimating anything, but it seems like there's going to be more digging as to what these additional payments are consisting of and who perhaps they went to. It's kind of weird, though, man, because if you sign NDAs, you know, how this is all of a sudden coming to surface now is kind of fishy in my mind. Again, I'm not the FBI, which, you know, not the most trustworthy agency in the federal government, but it seems like...
Oh, you mean Joe Biden's FBI? Is that what you're talking about, Joe Biden's FBI?
Maybe. Who knows? It seems like the SEC is not going to stop here. It seems like this independent probe is going to keep digging into Vince McMahon's finances. I'm not intimating that Vince McMahon broke any laws. I'm not. What I'm simply saying is this is just something that might take a really long time to really dig and dig and dig. Because who knows if we're finding more money now being dispersed. It's just something that, again, it seems like it could be a bad look for WWE. And we've talked about it from a PR perspective, whether or not this is keeping people from John Cena from showing back on TV or Rock being as openly adamant about, you know, being in the WWE umbrella. You know, it's things like this that from a PR perspective, bro, doesn't look good. And hopefully over time, for their sake, this is something that will just sort of wash away like a sandcastle on the beach.
Yeah, I think this is going to end up going away over time. I mean, look, Vince is no longer attached to the company anymore. It is what it is. You know, it's a new regime now, and, you know, they're kind of just trying to do their thing and you know, create their own stuff and mainly just keep the business and mainly the WWE trending the way it was before all this stuff happened, where they were really making a huge effort to get rid of all the bad press, all the bad stuff that had happened to the wrestling business. Look, dude, like Vince is an old guy with a lot of money who's constantly traveling. He doesn't have time to be courting some chick, taking her out to dinner, you know, doing all this stuff. He just wants to do what he wants to do, and that's it. Keep it casual, you know? Maybe he doesn't have a lot of game. Who knows? We don't know what the situation is. But, like, I don't really think it's that serious. You know, he's a guy who's sleeping with his employees, not the first guy to do it, you know, won't be the last guy to do it. If anything, it's a crime of morality, bro. Like, none of this is, like, all that serious. Would he, you know, the money issue with the board, okay, that's one thing. But, like, you know, the criticism that, like, all these people online, all these, like, Mark virgins who, like, you know, sleep in their mom's basement, you know, and, you know, subscribe to every female wrestler's OnlyFans out there. These are the guys who are complaining about it. These are the guys who are appalled. And it's like, listen, buddy, maybe if you got out a little bit more, maybe if you breathed some air outside of your basement, maybe if you actually, like, got laid without having to pay for it, you know, maybe you would understand where Vince McMahon's kind of coming from. Or maybe if you did get laid and paid for it, you'd understand where Vince is coming from. But regardless, it's just a lot of nonsense. Vince didn't do anything, you know, legally wrong. It is what it is, dude. And again, all this stuff's going to end up washing away in the long run. So, you know, that's sad. But it's really crazy to see, like, all these people that are, like, calling for Vince's head and even using the word rape. They're even using the word rape, which the word rape has not come up at all. And let me tell you something, and you could agree with this. As a man, that's one of the worst labels to be given as a man, you know, a rapist. You can call a rapist. Like, it's awful. It's the worst thing that any man would ever want to be called. You know, it's incredibly insulting. It's damning to your reputation. So for people to say this about Vince McMahon, like, no proof. Why? Because Vince, you know, screwed some of his talent, and they screwed him because they were trying to get over, and it was, you know, a consensual thing. Now all of a sudden, oh, he's a rapist, he's a bad guy. No, you're just mad at Vince because he didn't push the fucking shitty wrestler that you like. That's why. So get over it. Understand that, you know, it's a business. Things happen. It's not pretty. It's never going to be pretty. Hollywood's not pretty. None of the entertainment industries are pretty. You know what I'm saying? But it is what it is. And I think it's time that just fans, like, kind of understand it for what it is and just let these things happen. And trust me, at the end of it all, Vince isn't going to be bought up on any charges of, like, rape or any of this other stuff or these heinous things. Like, none of that's going to happen, you know? So I'll put it to you this way. You know it's bad when Bret Hart feels bad for Vince. Okay?
Yeah,
Bret Hart feels bad.
That's right.
Okay?
That's absolutely right.
That's saying a lot. That's saying a lot, okay? And look, I think the screw jobs will work. You know that. But for you know, and let's say if it's real. Let's just say hypothetically the screw job is real. For Bret, who's one of the guys that really has a gripe with Vince, and understandably so, for him to feel bad for Vince, that really tells you a lot. So, you know, just take it easy, people, and maybe give him the same compassion that you would want if you fucked up or if you made a mistake.
Oh, listen, absolutely. I think, and you know me, because notwithstanding, obviously, what I do on my Monday night show, but I don't like piling on people. And I think I've been consistent about that when it comes to the people and things of that nature. I don't like to pile on. So I'm with you on that, man. Let's switch gears here to AEW. WrestleNomics this week reporting that Quake by the Lake, emanating from the Target Center in Minneapolis, failed to shake up the ratings, man. And I'm going to give you some numbers here for the last 3 weeks of Dynamite. Going back to July 27th, it was 976,000. August 3rd, it dropped to 938,000. And then this past Wednesday, it barely went up to 972,000. So, I mean, this is a card this past Wednesday that was promoted heavily on TBS and TNT. We had the main event, Jon Moxley against Chris Jericho, their second encounter for the AEW World Championship. We had some other matches on during the evening. Bro, again, you know, I'm not saying WrestleNomics is the end-all, be-all of websites, but, you know, I kind of trust their reporting when it comes to these type of things. You know, other things, maybe not, but when it comes to, like, looking at these numbers and ratings and stuff like that, this is just pretty damning again for Tony Khan and AEW, man, where, you know, we're seeing now Paul Levesque being in charge of creative. We're seeing the bump that Raw is getting when it comes to the rating. And again, just I'm giving it to you right now here. We're looking at right before Vince stepped down, it was at the Raw on July 18th was 1.7. The Raw going into the Raw right before SummerSlam was 1.9. That was effectively the weekend of that Vince had stepped down officially. And then on August 1st, it went up to 2.23. And I believe this past Monday's dipped a little bit, but not much, to about 1.9. Actually, when you round it up, it's exactly 2 million. You know, Raw's going to stay up in that range, I think, as we continue going forward with Paul Levesque as the head of creative. We're seeing the numbers on SmackDown stay consistent. We're going to keep seeing, you know, 2 million, 2 million plus. But, you know, AEW, bro, I mean, this is if someone's not pushing the panic button to Tony Khan in the office, when he wakes up Monday, Thursday morning, and walks to the office at inside TIA Stadium in Jacksonville, I don't know what to tell you, bro. This is alarming if you're an AEW fan, because there's no rationalization here to say, well, the product's getting better. No, it's not. It's not attracting new viewers. It's well below a million. The last time they had a million, I'll tell you right now, I'm looking at the row of numbers here, according to WrestleNomics, the last time they hit a million was June 29th. That was literally the Dynamite right after Forbidden Door. And since then, that's it. It's been in the 900. As a matter of fact, on June 15th, it went down to 761,000. So for the better part of the half of the second half of 2022, these ratings have been abysmal. And I'll tell you, AEW fans are in denial. You talk to them online, you see their Twitter, you see people commenting on wrestling groups, on chat, whatever, on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. They're in denial, man. AEW is really, really not attracting new viewers. And there's a concern, especially with a TV contract, that they know they have to renew soon.
Yeah, absolutely. My question is, which class was first, or which course actually? Is it WrestleNomics or Thugonomics? Like, which one comes first? Because I'm a little curious on that. But I'm assuming it would be WrestleNomics, then Thugonomics. I don't know, but... look, dude, it's more of the same old from him, dude. And like, it's funny because, like, you'll see the memes, you'll see the stuff, oh, Triple H is bringing back, you know, Dakota Kai and all these. All of a sudden, now these guys are viewed as mid-level talent. When these are the people that, like, they were crying for, that Triple H dropped the – I mean, Vince dropped the ball with them, the WWE doesn't know what to do with them. Oh, my God, this guy's a surefire main eventer. Now, all of a sudden, these guys are mid-level. And they're saying, well, you know, Tony Khan countered Triple H by bringing back Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole and CM Punk. Let me tell you something. Oh, and Kenny Omega's coming back soon, too. Like, let me tell you, man, like, regardless of how talented those guys are individually or collectively, Tony Khan's still not going to know what the hell to do with them. It doesn't matter if they're back. He does not know what to do with them. And he continues to just misuse all this great talent. So, like, now his whole thing is, oh, making Daniel Garcia with Bryan Danielson. And let me tell you something. Bryan Danielson did a great job with that promo. I'm not surprised. For the longest time, that was, like, one of the holes in his game. And he's just stepped up and just become such a great promo, like, these last few years. It's really been a treat to watch. But, I mean, like, that's not what Bryan Danielson should be doing. That's not where he should be on the card. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, that doesn't work, you know? And now we're hearing this talk of Jericho against Danielson at All Out, which I'm not in the least bit interested in. I mean, you know, Danielson's going to do a great job making Jericho look good and making it look like he can still go. But, like, bro, that match with Moxley, that was horrible. It was botched city, dude. There were so many spots in that match that just looked absolutely horrible. Horrible.
Well, Pat, but Pat, though, real quick, and I'll let you finish the point because I really want to hear the rest of it. But again, bro, and, you know, this is the great thing about this show is that, you know, the perspectives we get to our audience is, again, you're a former worker. So your optic and your conceptualization of watching a match is very different than mine. I'm just a wrestling fan. And we talked off the air after, you know, Dynamite on Wednesday night. But again, man, because I rewatched the first one from February 2020 of Revolution, and I get it was different dynamics and all, but I think for what – I get it. It seems like AEW, when all else fails, let's just bleed in a match because that'll just make it more important. No, I think when you're bleeding every week, when you're bleeding every week, it just takes away from the novelty of what blood is supposed to represent. But having said that, again, this is the fan in me. Now, you're the worker. You're going to be a lot more demanding and a lot more harsh in the sense of grading. But I'll be very honest with you, man. Yes, their first match at Revolution in 2020 was better, but I don't think this match was all out terrible. I think, yes, Jericho still did, it was sloppy to some extent, but I don't think the match was overly as bad, I think, as you make it out to be. Again, you have a different criteria of standard because you're a worker, so that's the prism you're going to look at it through. But as a fan on my end, I don't think, listen, there have been worse matches on Dynamite for the title, and there have been worse matches on Dynamite and Rampage collectively. I'm sorry, bro. This wasn't one of them. I'm not saying it was great. It wasn't as good as their first match, but I think it was passable. And I think for what you're dealing with, I think being passable, unfortunately, this is what is going to be acceptable.
Listen, I know you're getting closer to 50, but you should really get your eyes checked out, dude, because that match was fucking horrendous. It was the shit. It wasn't good. It wasn't good. And the 2020 match was not good. You know, you saying that the 2020 match was better than this one is like saying, you know, democratic socialism or socialism. It's still the same shit. It still sucks. None of it's good. It's not going to work. You know what I'm saying? So this is my whole thing. Like, allowing this guy to trot out there and to have these matches, and more importantly, like, look, I'm not saying that he can't, like, completely work. He could still work. But modify your style. Don't go and fucking try and wrestle like you're 24 again and you're in Japan. It's not going to work. You were physically a different worker back then. You were mentally a different worker back then. You should know more now. You should be better now. You should be able to tell better stories, rely on your psychology, make your things matter more. The problem is that he's trying to sit at the cool kids table. And it's fine. Like, yeah, you can sit at the cool kids table. He's got that street cred with him. You know, he's an OG. He was one of the guys that was going to Japan back in the day, competing in the Super Juniors, you know, competing in ECW. He paved the way for the guys that are there now, you know. So they're all marks for him, that's for sure. But like, bro, when you're you know, pushing 40 some odd years old and you're going out there and you're trying to do the shit you did in your 20s, it's not gonna work, dude. Double J had a better match with Effie at the Hammerstein Ballroom GCW show at his age than Chris Jericho did. I mean, come on, bro. And Jeff's considerably older, but the biggest difference is that Jeff looks at it and goes, gee, you know what? I can't hit all the same shit that I used to hit. And not like Jeff was like this great high flyer or anything. He was a very athletic worker, an underrated worker in my opinion, but he relied on his in-ring psychology to tell a great story, and he made his bumps matter, and he made everything that he did matter more. And that's the mark of a good worker. Not going out there and trying to impress the young kids and sit at the cool table and be like, hey, look at me, I'm still awesome. Like, you're fucking Chris Jericho. Your accomplishments speak for themselves. There's no need for him to be doing this shit. And that's why this part of his career since he's left WWE and even the tail end of his stuff in WWE has just not been good for me whatsoever. Chris has a great ability to talk. He has a great ability to get things over with his talking. But, like, bro, nobody's walked away the better, like, from any of the stables that he's been involved in. MJF was made already by Cody by the time they ended up locking up. And Sammy Guevara, he's kind of gotten over more on his own heat than anything else. So it's just, to me, the match was just not good. It looked phony. It looked fake. It looked shitty. John carried him to that finish. They finished up the match, but then they had to bleed. They had to bleed to make the match good. And it's just like, so this is where we're at right now, you know? We're a dude who's like 40-something years old, has to go in there and fucking bleed and be a shell of his former self, and that's what's accepted as good wrestling. No, that shouldn't be the standard. That shouldn't be your main events. Your main events should have confident professionals in there, guys who are top-level dudes, guys that understand what it's like to be the main event and can still perform at a high level. Chris Jericho can still perform at a high level, but he just has to scale back on the shit that he does and stop trying to fit in with all these dudes. He's above all that shit. He's above all that shit. So for me, I didn't like the match. Honestly, I wanted to change it halfway through. I stuck with it to the bitter end, you know, and then, you know, what's his name? Carlos Miguel Punk came back. And even that was flat. I was just exactly.
Okay. No, exactly. No, absolutely. And again, which brings me to the point of that, you know, even, see, again, these are the things that Tony Khan gets wrong, where if you're going to start, again, All Out is a few weeks away, actually. It's a little under 3 weeks away for Labor Day weekend. Obviously, if you're going to be pushing Moxley and Punk for the title or for the unification, whatever, then obviously it's important to bring back Punk. But this is the thing, and again, this is where Tony Khan, the reason it's at under a million once again is, if at least you were hinting that Punk was going to return, that probably maybe could have done a little bit to bump the rating. But Punk coming out to save Moxley after the Jericho Appreciation Society came out, after the Blackpool Combat Club came out, and it was a big schmoz. And by the way, I don't know, I mean, you can tell me, because obviously as a worker, I don't know how legit it was, but it seemed like there was a moment when Jericho was thrown into the exposed turnbuckle. I don't know if that was a legit injury. I don't know if he really legit got cut or busted his nose, but that looked like a really bad cut on Jericho's face right after that. Again, that could have been just gimmick, who knows, but it seemed like when Punk came out, A, he looked a little bit bigger. I don't know if it's just wearing a black shirt and maybe that just makes you look thinner. I don't know, whatever. But it was very flat. Yeah, people cheered when they heard the music, but after Jericho and the JAS left the ring and you know, Moxley flips them off, they kind of have their face-to-face, and Moxley walks away, chest bumps them, and all that stuff. It seemed like Punk was trying to pull teeth by getting people energized in that arena, like to cheer. I'm sorry, like you this isn't an NFL game where the linebacker it's third down and you need a sack to stop the offense from, you know, killing the clock, and you know you're waving your hands in the air to get the crowd into it. That's what it seemed like Punk was doing. You shouldn't be doing that. Anybody who's really over shouldn't have to ask an audience to do that. I just thought it was a bad look. I didn't think him, you know, again, they didn't do anything to spike the rating, as we can see. And again, it just shows that Tony Khan, listen, I'm not saying you have to announce he's returning next week, because clearly, for example, next week's Dynamite is the first round of the Trios Tag Team Title Tournament. Clearly, the Bucks don't have a partner. Everyone's anticipating that it's probably going to be Omega because of the little vignettes that they've been dropping. Okay, maybe that might bump the rating. But you need to do something to even intimate that someone's returning. They didn't do that with Punk. I think once again, Khan missed a golden opportunity to get a rating spike.
Agreed. You know, I mean, he had that bullet in the chamber, you know, and instead of using that thing, instead of promoting it, instead of hyping it up and saying, okay, cool, we're going to hype this up, we're going to bring him back, we're gonna you know, have him, you know, come back in the main event and do an interview segment to set up the program with him and Moxley. You know, you make people tune in, you make people watch the whole program, stick around till the end, and then you see him and you leave him with a hot angle set up. They tried to do that here, but it just, I don't know, it just didn't really matter. And it didn't really come across as big or important. And it was just like just another part of the show. So it's like, you know, yeah, absolutely. It's a prime example of like how he had an opportunity to spike the rating, to get it over 1 million, to bring back Punk, to do something hot, and instead he's like, nah, we're just going to bring him out like this at the end. Like, no, man, no, no. And even so, he hasn't had a good run of shows to get to that point. You know what I'm saying? He hasn't had a good run of shows where it's over 1 million, and he knows that people are going to tune in and watch, so you could drop that Punk surprise at the end. Like, I don't know. It's just completely ass backwards. And again, the guy just still keeps making the same exact mistakes. And he just keeps on insisting that, like, somehow this is going to work. And in his mind, he's convinced that now bringing back Danielson, bringing back, you know, Cole, bringing back Punk, bringing back Omega, is just somehow, like, their presence is going to just somehow magically boost the rating. No, it's not. It's really not. It's really, really not. And it's not going to do anything hot. You know what I'm saying? And this is the problem. He just doesn't learn from any of his mistakes at all. And it's like he's just chasing his tail. He's just chasing his tail. And sooner or later, it's going to get to the point where the viewership is going to start decreasing more and more. And then he's going to end up being left with like an ROH crowd. Because that's going to be the core of it all. Because look, man, time's going to be up soon for a lot of these contracts. A lot of these guys who didn't completely, shit on WWE, they're going to end up back there. They're going to end up back there. You know what I mean? Moxley is a guy that I see ending up back there. You know, Jericho, ultimately, for Hall of Fame, is going to end up back there. Danielson's going to end up back there. You know, maybe a few other guys, you know, especially now that Triple H is in charge, you know? So it's going to be an interesting next couple of years, but it just seems like Tony Khan is just, like, not in a rush to really do anything, not really in a rush to do something hot. And he just continues to just cater to the same audience that will be there for better or worse. And I just think that it's not helping his company grow. And, you know, we've heard some rumblings recently in the news cycles about, you know, Discovery, you know, not wanting to really renew him for as much money. I mean, shit, I can understand why. Why should they? Why should they? They haven't really shown any incentive for them to renew for more money or the same amount of money. You know what I mean? Because the product has not grown. It hasn't grown at all. And it's continued to cater to the same audience. And, you know, they're just going to keep pushing the, well, you know, it's wrestling. We have wrestling. We have great wrestling. The best professional wrestler. Like, no, you don't. No, you don't. It's not that good. It's just spot wrestling, you know? And,
well, Pat,
and it just...
well, Pat, though, what's really interesting, I'll let you finish, though, but what's interesting, though, about Khan and mm-hmm. also, too, when you talk about contracts, you talk about not just a TV deal, but as soon as Triple H, you know, took over, obviously, and that was the main thing in the news cycle for a while, it seemed like Khan felt prompted to sort of defend that, oh, I'm not worried about guys on my roster because we're signed. You know, Cole's signed until 2025. Malakai Black is signed until 2026. Jericho signed until 2024. Like, he made it a point to specifically articulate, like, yeah, like, this is who I have under contract. This how long they're going to be under contract for. Like, yeah, I'm not worried about anybody jumping ship or trying to get out of their deals. It felt like you could tell he got a little triggered by Twitter or by the news cycle, by people saying, hey, by the way, you know, well, you know, Triple H is now back in charge. So people that didn't like Vince and feel that they'll get a better shake with Paul Levesque, right? Because, again, some marks are constantly going to conceptualize this, that they'll just feel like, hey, their person is going to get a better push under Paul Levesque, right? Cause isn't that what we're seeing on Twitter now? Whether it's Karrion
yeah.
Kross and Scarlett, whether it's Dakota Kai, whether it's Hit Row, whether it's, you know, even Dexter Lumis or anything like that, it just seems like, hey, you know, these are people that Vince didn't want to push. I mean, again, you know, Gunther now maybe under Triple H, not to say he wasn't getting pushed under Vince, obviously he was, but maybe now under Triple H, you know, hey, Paul Levesque might see something different in Gunther and push him even more. It just seems like Tony Khan got really sensitive about whether or not talent would jump ship. Because I'll tell you right now, all things being equal, if contracts were null and void this instant as we broadcast, it'd be really interesting to see who would want to jump ship back to WWE because of Paul Levesque.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. I'm just curious to see where this goes and, you know, what happens in the next couple of years. But, like, Tony Khan really needs to, like, change things up, man, and he really needs to start making a more compelling program. Like, he cannot continue to just rely on the same audience, the same core. Like, this is the same audience, this is the same core that pretty much put Ring of Honor out of business. I mean, the pandemic had something to do with it, obviously, but, like, they weren't really thriving. They weren't really doing as good as they could have been doing. They were doing smaller houses. You know what I'm saying? And they let that company go by the wayside. So what makes him think that they're going to suddenly keep his company in business? Like, nah, man, it's just not going to work. It's not going to work. So, you know, he's going to continue to do what he's convinced himself of is the best way to go. To me, it seems like all the stuff that, like, veterans or, like, people like JR probably said, nah, that wouldn't work. That's not going to work. That's the stuff that he seems very hell-bent on doing. And, again, man, it doesn't matter. Like, yeah, okay, Punk and Moxley will have a good match. They'll bleed, of course. And, you know, it'll be decent. But, like, that's not going to be enough, man. It's just not going to be enough to, like, keep people interested consistently and keep the viewers over a million. It just isn't. And, you know, I mean, Tony Khan had a great opportunity, man. He got Vince McMahon at his absolute weakest in terms of ratings, in terms of storyline, booking, the whole nine. You know, obviously Vince was still doing great financially, but, like, we're not talking about, like, peak Vince McMahon. Like, you know, this was very far from it. And he had a chance to take all these talents that were marginalized, you know, by Vince McMahon or just completely underutilized or not even utilized at all. And he had a chance to take those guys and say, hey, I'm going to make these guys something that you could never do. I'm going to make these guys stars and I'm going to make the most of this. And instead of him doing that, he just decided to just continue doing whatever nonsense he thinks is right. So, you know, it is what it is, man. I'm still very much convinced that he's not going to break those habits. He's not going to break those cycles, regardless of who comes back, regardless of who's doing what. It's just not going to work, dude. It's not going to work. So let's see what happens between now and then. But like I said, I give them anywhere between 2 to 3 years, you know, before, like, everybody's gone. And I would not be surprised if at some point in time Punk ends up back in WWE even too. You know what I mean? Who knows?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, you know, all roads lead to All Out coming up on Labor Day weekend. Obviously, Clash of the Castle the night before is going to be a great – well, the afternoon before will be a great show. Obviously, we'll be touching upon that in the next couple of weeks leading up into All Out. Now, folks, again, our main event this week here on the show, obviously. Now, one of the things I do for a living, besides being an award-winning journalist, is also I'm an accomplished educator. And part of the task of being an educator is grading. And that's not always an easy part of my job description. Obviously, you have to try to take bias out of it and grade accordingly. So let's have a grading exercise this week. And it's only a few weeks in since Paul Levesque was made effectively head of creative in WWE for both Raw and SmackDown. I don't know, Pat. I mean, it's my understanding that Shawn Michaels is still overseeing NXT. I think that's still, I think, what's in place. I don't know if Paul Levesque is also going to oversee that. I'm sure he will to some extent. But it seems like the main roster booking is what Paul Levesque will be overseeing completely. I got to tell you, man, from SummerSlam, because that was his first show, okay, that was Paul Levesque's first show. And you saw that, whether it was bringing back Bayley, Dakota Kai, Io Sky, the matches itself, the finish for the main event, what we saw on Raw, you know, starting to push the coveted United States Heavyweight Championship on Raw, which I think has always been a great belt historically. But, you know, I know it's not
poor
the
man,
IC title.
Poor man's Intercontinental title. That's what that is.
That's fine. It's still a prominent, respected championship. A lot of great wrestlers historically have held it. So I would say in these first two
the
and a half
weeks. Women's
title,
too.
Well, okay, fine. I would say in these first 2.5 weeks, I would give Paul Levesque an A. I think he has been, you know, again, and let me just look at my notes here. Surprising, obviously, with the return of Karrion Kross and Scarlett. I think we can both agree that Scarlett really is the attraction there because Karrion Kross, you know, physique-wise and look-wise, can look like a lot of other guys in this business. So it's not really about him standing out. Not bad on the promo. Obviously, we saw that last night on SmackDown. It seems like Paul Levesque is interested in maybe pushing Karrion Kross in the coming weeks. You did hear reports from different sites that the USA Network executives would like a champion back on their program on Raw regularly. Roman Reigns is not – obviously, he's working limited dates during the summer and going into the fall. It seems like maybe there's a plan to break up the titles. And I know that pissed off a lot of marks of unifying the belts, but again, marks get pissed off about anything. But it seems like, you know, Paul Levesque is maybe going that direction, pushing Karrion Kross a little bit as the second main heel on SmackDown, pushing the women's tag team titles back to the forefront. Again, what this means, maybe it sets up a future faction feud between, you know, maybe Bayley's faction winning the women's tag titles, maybe Bayley challenging Bianca, and perhaps Sasha and Naomi coming back to help to assist Bianca in that. I don't know. That seems like speculation. Might be a good booking. Who knows? We're seeing, obviously, the U.S. title being featured. We're seeing guys on Raw getting more TV time. SmackDown, the same thing. Great matches. Again, man, in only 2.5 weeks, I mean, I know it's only a pay period, but I'll give Paul Levesque an A thus far.
I'm going to go with a less conventional grading system. I'm going to give him an H for happy. He's made the fans happy. And, I think he's managed to still keep the casuals, right? And he's also bought back the disgruntled marks. And I think ultimately this is kind of they're kind of heading in the direction that they want to head in, which is basically bringing back, you know, the 12 to 18 year old crowd, you know, the crowd that wants to see cooler, edgier stuff. Maybe the crowd that, to some extent, we might say they've lost to AEW. Let's just say, you know. He's going to bring back his guys that maybe he felt were underutilized or didn't really get a fair chance. And, you know, I think with Cross, I'm not huge on him. I think he's a very talented performer as far as, like, his the technical aspects of his wrestling, his ring positioning, all those things that he does. He does it very, very well. But, I mean, he's just another guy who's an angry guy, you know, big, angry, muscle-bound guy who does a shoot style. The act, really, the star of the act is his girl. You know, she's the real star of the show. And I think having her is going to make a difference to him, sure. But I'd like to see where he goes. I hope he kind of proves me wrong. I hope we see more of what he's capable of instead of just what we've seen in different companies. You know, obviously, you know, building up those matches with the former NXT talent who are now, like, you know, prominent women in the roster, you know, that's something I'm sure that's very important to him and something that he's going to continue to do. And again, just having that fluidity from the two rosters with HBK and with him, they're both on the same page. They both know what they're trying to do. You know, there's not going to be any major differences. There's not going to be, like, any major problems or inconsistencies. You know, name changes might still happen. You know what I'm saying? Io Sky, I think, is a good name instead of Io Shirai. Like, what does it matter? Io Shirai sounds like a wine. You know, Io Sky works. You know, you're incorporating her last name, you know, her nickname, Genius of the Sky. Okay, that's cool. Mm-hmm. That works. But so far, I think he's on a really solid path. And, again, I think he's planting the seeds for things to come. And I just think that when the time's right, you know, we're really going to see them get out ahead. We really, really are. And, I mean, you know, there's still some people on the shelf. There's still guys, you know, like Bron Breakker. That's a guy that you look at and you're like, geez, you know, what's this guy going to be in a couple of years? Like, he's going to be something special. He's definitely going to be a main eventer, you know? So when he comes, that's going to be something special to see. And, you know, I just think that he's doing all the right things right now to put himself in a position to be able to thrive for the next few years. And I think thus far he's done a wonderful job. And more importantly, he's pleasing all the people across the fan base.
No, he certainly is. And Pat, again, just for the sake of just some, you know, being pragmatic here, I mean, give me a grade, bro. Give me a grade. Give me a letter grade that we're all used to, you know, sort of, you know, acclimated with when it comes to grading. Give me a grade here, bro. Come on.
I'm going to give him an A. I'm going to give him an A as well. I think he's onto something. You know, I think it's too early on in his regime for me to, like, give him an A+ just yet, but I think he's doing the things that he needs to do to kind of right the wrongs and kind of build up that goodwill with maybe part of the fan base that has been lost, even though I can't stand that part of the fan base. But he's doing that, you know? And look, it's important. It is. It's important. And I think they recognize that. And I think they look at these numbers and I think they're saying, gee, you know, we could do better doing this instead. And we can go in this direction to improve that. So I think as far as it goes with planting the seeds and starting to let things grow and starting to let the roots grow, he's doing the right things necessary to get there. Where it goes, what the payoffs will be, that remains to be seen. But I think in the meantime, I think, you know, he's winning back a lot of the good faith with fans that maybe Vince lost towards the end of his regime.
Here's something that's interesting. And again, I don't know whether or not to take the Mirror seriously. Joshua Lee apparently is their sports trends writer for the Mirror. I did see a couple of other news sites report on this. It what's being alleged, Pat, is that Triple H is looking to remove two words from Vince McMahon's banned list after taking over the reins.
Suck it? Is it suck it?
No. Apparently, again, I'm trying to confirm this because it's only a few sites that have reported this. I don't know. Again, until Billy Bobby confirms this completely, that's when you know it's scripture, basically. But it seems like it's being reported that the word wrestler and wrestling are now being given the green light after the creative director removed them from the list following his appointment. Again, we don't know if this is true or not, but Pat, I got to tell you, You know, and I'm someone who's, you know me, man, as an academic, I'm very much about wording, and I'm very much about, you know, conceptualization of things. But, you know, this would not be the worst thing in the world to go back to using the term wrestler and wrestling. Again, I'm showing my mark fandom here, obviously, by being, you know, adamant about this, but I don't think this would be the worst thing. Theoretically, if indeed Paul Levesque does do this and we start hearing the word wrestling again and we start hearing the word professional wrestling, I don't think it's a bad thing, bro. Again, at the end of the day, it's World Wrestling Entertainment. It's not World Sports Entertainment. It's World Wrestling Entertainment. So
it
maybe
should be.
I'm being OCD. Maybe I'm being a little too overly analytical, which is what I do, which is what I'm good at. But I don't think this would be the worst thing, bro.
I don't really care. I mean, they could call it the fucking Hokey Pokey Federation for all I fucking care. At the end of the day, we know what it is. We've known what it is. They've been calling it sports entertainment forever. And, you know, we know that it's fucking wrestling. That's it. So, you know, call it whatever you want. It's still going to be the same exact thing. Maybe, you know, and again, like this kind of ties in with winning back that 12 to 18 demo, you know,
mm-hmm.
getting those people
mm-hmm.
back on board. Switching the people over from AEW, the booger eaters, you know, the people who have you know, weird stains on their pants, you know, that crowd, you know, he's winning that crowd back with little things like that. And again, it kind of seems like that's what the objective is. But me personally, I could give a rat's ass what they call it. I know what it is.
You know
what I'm saying? Like I don't need to, it's not this big elaborate thing. Like, it's not this thing that, like, I'm going to lose sleep over and be like, oh my God, they're not calling it wrestling anymore. Look, Sports Entertainer was perfect when it came along. You know what I'm saying? Shawn Michaels embraced it and it added to the heat that he already had. And it made it great. But in a lot of ways, it's true. Like, Shawn was a sports entertainer. You know, he was a tremendous entertainer. He was athletic. He was a great mm-hmm. athlete, arguably one of the greatest to ever step between them ropes. And, you know, it didn't hinder him in any type of way. And I don't think it's hindered anybody. On the contrary, that term's given AEW a failed storyline to work with. So, I mean, it's given
mm-hmm.
a lot more to the business, I think, than most people like to give it credit for.
No, certainly. Again, for our audience at home that are not familiar, again, I did some homework on this. But apparently the ban list that had been in effect for some years now included the words blood, choke, belt, strap, diva, headshot, trauma, kayfabe, mofos. That's kind of funny, mofos. House show, DQ, anti-diva, spinal injuries, victim, violent, wrestling, wrestlers, WWF, obviously for legal reasons, probably the most important one, wife beater, curb stomp, push, being over, baby face, heel, jobber, card, strangle, kill, murder. I can't imagine why. Non-title,
yeah.
And attack. Like, it's kind of interesting because, right, haven't we seen like championship contenders match, right? Like, that used to like annoy the shit out of me. I'd be like, oh, what is it? If it's not for the title, it's not title. Just say it's not title.
But it makes sense. It's a champions contenders match. Like, you're contending to compete for that championship. Like, why? Because Vince McMahon made it up and because WWE pushes it in the graphics, all of a sudden everybody fucking hates it. It's like rematches. When everybody was bitching about, oh, there's too many rematches. Motherfucker, wrestling's built on rematches. Some of the greatest storylines
yeah.
that they've ever had in the business were fucking based on rematches. Like,
it's so nonsensical,
the things that people complain about.
Now in essence, looking at this list, though, Pat, again, this is the mark in me. I mean, I'm not saying all these words should be brought back. But I would argue, again, wrestler, wrestling, not the end of the world. I wouldn't mind that. The terms babyface and heel, I think those are more like industry-oriented
yeah.
words. I don't think
– I don't
that
like
should
that.
Not be, that should not be said on the air. I agree. Jobber.
Or
I
card.
Card. Well, strangle and kill, obviously, I think we all know why those words really shouldn't be used anyway. But murder.
Right.
You know, attack.
Curb stomp. I could understand why they don't want to say curb stomp. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of like negative connotations to that. You know.
Of course. You know, belt, blood, DQ, house show. I mean, it's not the end of the world if you bring these back. I mean, I get your point. It doesn't really listen. Most people couldn't give two drops of piss about it. And I'll be very fair. I think a lot of marks wouldn't give a shit if this happened. But I think that theoretically, some of these words being back, not the worst thing in the world, obviously, for the announcers to use. And we'll see exactly what Paul Levesque feels is good to use, obviously. I mean, you know, for a lot of marks, hearing the words wrestling and wrestler or professional wrestler again, I think that'll – again, I think it's the scratching of the belly. I think Paul Levesque wants to scratch those bellies but not give you too much. It's almost like the dictator that, oh, he'll turn on the Wi-Fi during certain times of the day and the bread rationing will be okay. But I don't think I'm just convinced – I'm convinced Paul Levesque is not going to give away the store because he doesn't have to.
Right. Right, right. Absolutely. I agree. I think, like I said, I think this is all with the mentality of, okay, we're really trying to win back that lost demo. We're really trying to win back the people that you know, maybe some might say Vince drove away. You know what I'm saying? I think a lot of it, too, has to do with the fact that, like, you know, you had these podcasts, you know, like these dirt sheet writers, all these people writing all this nonsense. You know, apparently Dave Meltzer is, you know, like the be-all, end-all. And, you know, I mean, like, let's take Roman, for example, right? Roman should have been a huge babyface a long time ago, right? But because CM Punk did that podcast and mentioned, well, you got to make Roman look strong, and then Dave Meltzer's putting out all this stuff about how Roman's the next John Cena, the fans immediately resisted it. But when Roman was in the Shield, and he was the man in the Shield, and he was doing all this cool stuff, the marks loved him. They thought the Shield was hot. They were like, oh, man, this is great, you know? And Roman was really, really cool. I mean, you remember Philadelphia, that Royal Rumble, where Batista ended up winning, and Roman should have won that. Roman should have won that, in my opinion. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, that right there was like a prime example of just like the dirt sheets and just like, you know, podcasts and all this stuff kind of turning on the wrestlers, you know? Obviously, you know, we look at Roman now and it's incredible to see what he's become, you know, but that potential was always there. It was just a matter of realizing it. It was just the right place, the right time, you know, and just being able to put all that stuff together to become what he's become. But, you know, I mean, marks are going to be resistant no matter what. They're going to find a reason not to like something if they don't want to like something. You can ban words, you can bring back words, you can change names, you can do whatever. They're still going to figure out a way to fucking complain about it, but they're still going to tune in. They're still going to tune in. So for me, you know, I look at this, but I understand like what the end game is because they really, really want to bring that back. They want this generation of kids to have their own attitude era. You know what I'm saying? That's what they want. They want their own attitude era.
Well, Pat, to be fair, I think if that is the explicit goal or one of the goals, I would just argue that what we're seeing now is better wrestlers and caliber wrestling than we did during the Attitude Era. Not to say we saw bad wrestling. Let me be fair because I love the Attitude Era. But let's be honest, though. Did we see grade A pro wrestling during the Attitude Era as a totality? Some fans would say, well, it was the gimmicks, it was the bombastic behavior of Stone Cold Steve Austin, it was the ongoing war with Vince McMahon, it was DX against the Nation, it was Mark Henry and Mae Young, God help us, and other things that were very graphic. But can you go back and say, well, for a totality, man, it was great wrestling. Man, what a plethora of great workers. There were, I'm not saying that there weren't, but let's be fair, by today's standards, I mean, there is a tsunami of great, great workers and talent now. Not to say that it wasn't during the Attitude Era, but I think that if this is where it's heading towards, we're going to see a better talent level of wrestlers working during this era. Does that make sense? Did I explain it correctly?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you surmised it excellently. I mean, like, I just think that, like, overall now, you know, we're going to see a different type of product. And I think that this doesn't bode well for Tony Khan, man. It really, really doesn't. Because again, the last thing you want is a motivated Triple H. That's the last thing you want, man. because dude has proven that when yep. you know, properly motivated, you know, he can really change things and he can really do some interesting stuff. So, and again, you know, he's got that good faith, that goodwill with that part of the fan base that ran away, you know? So very, very interesting times ahead, I think, for the business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll see again. It's only a pay period in, basically. But Paul Levesque is pushing all the right buttons. And I'll tell you, it seems like full speed ahead for the creative direction of WWE now as we enter the second half of 2022. And obviously, you know, WrestleMania season is going to start heating up soon, right? After Clash of the Castle, we'll be seeing Extreme Rules in Philadelphia, Survivor Series in Boston. Again, leading up to the Royal Rumble, it's going to be an exciting next few months as we head out to WrestleMania 39 in Los Angeles at SoFi next April 1st and 2nd for sure. Folks, that's our show for this week here. Again, as a reminder, if you love what we talk about, if we're still lacking in topics or something we haven't covered, do us a favor. Write to the show, workinthemarks@gmail.com. We do read our emails. We do answer them. A shout-out to our boy, D. Rotten, who oversees the inbox and also helps promote our up-and-coming program every week here on Blog Talk Radio, as we're obviously available on other platforms as well, on Spotify as well and others. Again, a shout-out to D. Rotten, a great American, a great patriot, in my opinion. Thanks for his, you know, he always likes my political show links, so I love D. Rotten for that. But again,
I
folks,
thought, I thought he didn't. I thought he didn't like football. He's a Patriots fan. I didn't know this.
Well, no, he's a fellow patriot in terms of, you know, sort of being a fan of conservatism or the Fernando Uribe brand of practical, commonsensical conservatism that I espouse every week.
Oh, he likes sensationalism. That's what he likes, right?
Here we go. Well, I'll tell you something. You know, But folks, shout out to D Rotten on that one because he works so hard for us, and we love all of his contributions. And his work ethic is really, really something we admire and we love about D. Rotten. I'm not going to give his government name because he'll get mad at that, but D. Rotten, folks, check him out on Instagram as well when you can. Great stuff that he puts out there as well. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, folks. Follow the show, most importantly, @working_the_marks. Also, check out PVR's Instagram, @PattyRican. Once again, @PADDYRICAN. And also check out my own Instagram @TheFernandoZone. Also on Twitter, check out PBR @PatrickSKVM. And my own Twitter as well @TheFernandoZone. And make sure you like Working the Marks on Facebook. Pat, before we close it out here today, any last thoughts here? What should we look out for coming up?
Got an appearance coming up this week on the Lucky 13 Saloon podcast. That's going to be pretty fun. I'll be there on behalf of the child actors. Obviously, going to be also representing Working the Marks. And we got a show coming up next weekend, August 19th, at Lucky 13 Saloon in Brooklyn as well. Really looking forward to getting back out there and playing. And, check out the child actors. Guarantee you will not regret it. We always go the extra mile to put on an entertaining show. We are the sports entertainers of musicians, so you know you're going to get the finest and the absolute best. So, check out the child actors and keep listening, folks. We really appreciate all your support here on the show, and we might have some surprises in store for you in the future, so keep an eye out for that.
That's right. That's right. And folks, make sure you check out Monday nights on Jersey First TV's YouTube page and also on Facebook Live. You can't miss me on Facebook. I'm the very emphatic guy with the Joe Biden sucks t-shirt in my profile picture. So you can't miss me there. Real Talk airs every Monday night live at 6 p.m. Eastern time, doing great traffic, doing traffic that these other so-called journalists in New Jersey media, the liberal media establishment, like Uncle Dave with NJ Spotlight News, you know, David Cruz, some of the clowns at Insider NJ, as well as NorthJersey.com. Hey, every single week, it's not dozens, it's not hundreds, it's thousands of views every week. Organic, by the way, nothing paid for, nothing boosted, okay, because we all know boosters don't work, right? So let's not fall into that trap here on the show. But organic traffic, folks, every Monday night live, 6 p.m. Eastern time for Real Talk via Jersey First TV. This Monday, I will have Anthony Calandro the owner of one of the best shooting ranges in New Jersey, family-oriented for over 40 years, gun for hire in Woodland Park. He's also an NRA executive board member. As I'm an NRA member, we'll be talking about the Second Amendment. We'll be talking about protecting ourselves on Monday night. Tune in, folks, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Real Talk. Ladies and gentlemen, he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the glorious, the amazing, the illustrious PBR. And I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, the professor, Fernando Uribe. And if we're boiling piss, if we're pissing you off, if we're getting you talking, guess what? We're doing it because we are working the marks every week on Blog Talk Radio. Folks, see you next week here on the show. Sharing is caring. Always share our episodes. blogtalkradio.com/workingthemarks. Listen on Spotify, also on Blog Talk Radio, and also on Google. Folks, we'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And as always, let's keep on talking.